Today's episode of Dog Nation Daily is brought to you by Kroger, fresh for everyone.
Presented by DogNation.com, this is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans. Here's your host, Brandon Adams.
So we've been doing a lot of video shows last couple of days beyond just Dog Nation Daily presented by Kroger, which you're watching or listening to right now. And the subject of what Nick Saban's involvement is going to be on this game on Saturday. And every now and then when this kind of comes up, people will come in the comment section. They'll say, well, B.A., you've got to understand there is a rule that's been written that says coaches that are not a part of the game. And right now, that's the most common assumption about Saban because he has tested positive for the coronavirus that he won't be there. And the very letter of the law rule, and we read this to you yesterday, as it had been reported on by AL.com, is that there's no contact allowed from like 90 minutes before the game to 90 minutes after the game. And I think some Georgia fans have kind of assumed that that was that. It was just as simple as that. I'm here to tell you it is not going to be that simple, I don't think anyway, when it comes to Georgia and Alabama on Saturday. It certainly seems like that Alabama and its coach Nick Saban are still working very hard to pull out whatever stop could possibly be found to find some way for Nick Saban to still be involved in this game on Saturday, despite the fact that he has tested positive for the coronavirus. So you need to be paying very close attention to what's going on in Tuscaloosa, listening to the things that Nick Saban is saying, and on guard for anything ahead of the game on Saturday. First of all, the rule that I just mentioned there, Saban himself has read that rule, and he is not happy about it, as he said last night on his coach's show. Take a listen to this.
The protocol is if you're in quarantine, you can't have any remote access to the sidelines, and you can't go to the game even if they put you in an isolated area. So never having thought much about that, and I'm not being critical of anybody here, if you're the head coach, there ought to be a better way to do it. I don't know exactly what that is, but there should be a better way to do that. You ought to be able to have some kind of communication with the sidelines.
So Nick Saban says, listen, I know this rule is there. Forgive me for not having read this before, but now that it personally impacts me, maybe there's a better way we could do this than if I can't be in the stadium, have me totally isolated away and not involved in this game at all. The wheels are turning here about how Alabama can get some sort of unusual circumstances waiver or whatever else that, you know, kind of happens in the age of the coronavirus. Interesting to hear, though, Nick Saban criticizing the rule that will prohibit his involvement if he is not there at the stadium on Saturday, a rule that I say exists for good reason. I don't have a problem if Saban turns up, you know, negative tests, things like that, and if he were to be in the stadium, I got no problem, you know, with that whatsoever. But I've said before, for a number of reasons, I don't like the idea of anyone trying to coach a game from outside the stadium. I think processing the information becomes a little bit easier, and an extra advantage, I think, is more easily gained when you are kind of outside the controlled stadium environment. I think that rule, in other words, exists for a reason. But here's the thing you should understand about Nick Saban. Nick Saban is such a selfless guy. Nick Saban's not arguing this because of his own selfish needs, his desire to coach, his desire to control every facet of what goes on Saturday. You should know that's not what Nick Saban is thinking about at all here. Nick Saban, as he explained last night during his coach's show, this is really about trying to take pressure off of his assistants. You see, this is something that Nick Saban, he says, is doing for other people's benefit, not his own. This is Nick Saban again.
I just think it's really tough that if you have to make a close call, I would just hate to see somebody on our staff have to make a close call and get criticized for it if it didn't work, because I don't think that's fair to them, if you know what I mean. I understand the game. If you make a call and it works, it's a good call. If you make a call and it doesn't work, it's a bad call. All right, so it's as simple as that. I get that. All right. You know, if an assistant on your staff has to make one of those kind of calls and it doesn't work, I'd hate to see someone have to get criticized for something that probably shouldn't even have been their responsibility to make that call to start with.
Yeah, Nick Saban would just hate that if one of his assistants got criticized. I mean, after all, you've never seen Nick Saban criticize one of his own assistants during a game. Nick Saban would hate that. This is all about selflessness on the part of Saban, wanting to take pressure away from those assistant coaches who might have to make some tough decisions they're not used to having make. See, Nick Saban isn't thinking about his own desires here. He's thinking about everybody else's desires, or at least that's what he would have you believe. But here's the most important thing to know about all of this. When it comes to Saturday, what has been treated as a cut and dry deal of, well, Nick Saban's got coronavirus, so therefore he's not involved in this game at all. if you listen very, very closely, that is not exactly the way that Saban sees this himself right now. These next few words you're about to hear from the Alabama coach, I think, are important, at least in the early stages of Friday, when we're still processing all this information. Here's Nick Saban again.
I would hate not to be at the game on Saturday, if that's what this turns out to be. And I would hate not to be, at least to have a headset where I could communicate with the sidelines, even if you're in the press box in isolation. Even if you couldn't go in the locker room and communicate with the players, you could still Zoom with the players. So there's ways to do this where you wouldn't be putting anybody in harm's way. But, you know, I also really believe in the safety of all the people, not just the players on our team or the coaches. So there would have to be some logistical things that could be worked out so that you could do something like that.
So if you heard that correctly, what you heard Nick Saban say there is, I'd hate to not be at the stadium if that's what it turns out to be. Nick Saban not exactly waving the white flag of surrender on this yet. Sources close to Alabama have reported that if he does get that series of negative tests that are kind of ongoing every day right now, there is still a small window by which Saban could be there. I would say the drama involving Nick Saban and his potential involvement in this game on Saturday is far from done. All right, let me shift gears to this. One of the other big topics all week long has been, if Saban doesn't coach on Saturday, how much does Alabama lose because of not having Saban? And someone who made a very articulate point about this, and really a pretty emphatic point, was former Georgia grad David Pollack, now an ESPN analyst. Pollack on ESPN this week has said that if Nick Saban's not there, it hurts Alabama in more ways than one. Pollack very clear in his opinion on this. Take a listen to the former Dog.
Saban's not a caretaker. Like, he's not a guy that's just the rah-rah guy and doesn't have his hands in on everything. Everything runs through Nick. Like, everything. And talking to, like, I talked to a coach who was at Alabama. One of the things that was surprising, the coin toss is directed by him. Which way they're going to kick, warm-ups, like everything that goes on, injured players, everything goes through Nick Saban. So this will definitely be different. And I think just from a presence standpoint, how many times have we seen Nick chew guys out on the sidelines, chew coaches out on the sidelines and bring energy and not take certain things? And the guys are always, you're always looking over like, oh God, like dad's mad at me. Like, I got to make sure I step up my game. So I think this is huge. There are some coaches that it wouldn't be as big of a deal. This is an enormous deal for Alabama and the Crimson Tide.
By the way, as we're doing this show live on this Friday morning, you just heard from David Pollack there. His ESPN College Game Day colleague, Desmond Howard, just tweets a moment ago that Howard believes, and by the way, Game Day will be in Tuscaloosa this weekend, already there on the scene, I'm guessing. Howard believes that Saban will be on the sidelines on Saturday. That's Desmond Howard, the ESPN College Game Day analyst, there just a moment ago. So as I said, this is still very much a story worth following. But let me stay on the train of thought that I was on here, and we'll do more of this later on in the program. We'll welcome on former Alabama great Mike Johnson to help clear up some of what Desmond Howard tweets right there. So David Pollack says that Nick Saban's absence from this game, if that's the way this all goes, is huge for Alabama and injuring their chances of winning this game. I'm not quite so sure I'm with Pollack on that, as it being quite as big of a deal as David Pollack describes that. Yes, there are lots of in-game decisions that the head coach makes. Saban himself a moment ago addressed some of those that he said he didn't want to have to see his assistants have to make during a game. But on a one-game basis, and really that's all UGA fans care about right now, what happens on Saturday between the Dogs and the Tide, on a one-game basis, I'm actually not so sure the end result for Alabama is all that much different with or without stadium, or I should say with or without Saban. And I'll give you a little bit of evidence that kind of backs this up. We talked to Barry Jones, former Alabama great here this week. It's going to be a part of some of our Dog Nation pregame coverage on the Dog Nation video channels on Saturday, and you'll hear some of this on the Dog Nation website a little bit later on today. But one of the things that Jones said in terms of what Saban's involvement is now, as Saban has kind of progressed through his career, at least on one side of the ball, he may be less involved than he's ever been before. I think Barrett Jones' words here, a guy that played with Saban, knows him well, I think are pretty important to understand just how involved or maybe not involved the regular game day process Nick Saban is at this point. Listen to Barrett Jones and see if you agree.
Coach Saban, obviously, he's a defensive guy, so I think he's a lot more involved defensively than he is offensively. I think there are rare occasions where going forward on fourth down, whether to kick a field goal or punt or things of that nature that he's involved, I wouldn't surprise me if he occasionally gets on there and tells the offensive coordinator to run the ball more, knowing him. I think generally in offense, especially lately with how offense changed, I think he leaves please the offense up to the coordinators. I think he does put more input in on defense. He doesn't call the plays on defense necessarily, but I think he has a lot more input with the different kind of coverages and how to handle different situations defensively.
Let me be very blunt here just for a moment. I don't think David Pollack is doing this, but I think other people might try to use Pollack's words as a way of building all this up. There's this attempted narrative that's trying to be formed here of, well, if Georgia faces Alabama without Nick Saban, and if there's no huge crowd there at Bryant-Denny Stadium, and if this Alabama team seems like a little bit different version of the Saban teams that have been great over the course of the last few years, there's kind of a Bama fan imagination of this of, well, if you ain't going to beat them now, when is you going to do it? I mean, that's kind of the way that Alabama fans are trying to sort of set all of this up coming up on Saturday. And that's not a rhetorical question. I mean, there's a chance that Georgia still doesn't win on Saturday, even with all of the Nick Saban stuff that's been going on. And the when is you going to beat them type question? Well, the answer to that may still be December. I mean, this is not one of those deals where the ultimate legacy of Kirby Smart is going to be decided one way or another. Even if Nick Saban's not there, the players that he's recruited are still on the field, and the processes that he's put in place will still be put to the test against those same processes that have been put to the place by Kirby Smart. I honestly don't believe on a one-game basis Saban's presence, either there or not, impacts the game all that much. I do think the drama of where Saban is and how involved he's allowed to be is worth paying attention to for reasons that I've been cataloging. But the notion of somehow Alabama becomes the ultimate underdog if Saban is at home and not able to be a part of this game, I think that's completely overblown, but it's obviously a storyline we will continue to monitor. My name is Brandon Adams, and this is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans. We're presented today by Kroger, and glad to have you with us. No matter how you get to us today, live on video, 10 a.m., Facebook, YouTube, Twitter, on the radio at noon, on Athens Sports Radio 960 The Ref, and as a podcast, wherever you find them, including the world-famous DogNation.com. It's so glad to have you with us today. I am so glad to have you, and it's fun to be doing this here today. And by the way, busy show for us guest-wise. As I said before, it is former Alabama All-American Mike Johnson going to be with us before we're done today. All of the drama from Tuscaloosa. We will hear from a guy that played with Coach Saban, for Coach Saban. He'll kind of help us separate fact from fiction when it comes to all that. We'll do that coming up in a couple of minutes. It's Jeff Sintel on the road with him in just a moment, assisted by AAA. Before that, let me do more on kind of the fun storylines around UGA as we go around the doghouse, delivered by Marco's Pizza. Actually, before that, let me give a huge shout out to our friends at Kroger here. I want to make sure I let you know about what's going on with Kroger. Of course, there is still time for you to get involved with our Dog Nation Ultimate Fan Contest. It's presented by our friends at Kroger. When you go to the website, dognation.com, you can find out all the information. Obviously, Dog Nation known for some of the greatest fans in all of sports, and you may be the ultimate fan. And if you are, well, you want to show that off by going to DogNation.com, finding out how you can submit your entry. Someone's going to win a $500 gift card courtesy of Kroger as we head towards the holiday season. That's obviously a really good thing to be a part of. Also, we're going to give away a lot of these Dog Nation Kroger-branded masks celebrating the great moments of recent Dog Nation history. A whole bunch of folks, I think it's up to 50 people, are going to be selected to win one of those Kroger Dog Nation branded masks. I've been showing those to you. Those are really fun. I think it's really cool stuff all the way around. Let me see if I can pull one of these out. Yeah, look at that. I actually have mine that I've been wearing here today. Can we come close for a second? Is that possible technologically wise? It may not be. There, yeah, there you go. Look at that. There's the Dog Nation Kroger branded mask. This kind of looks back at the great Rose Bowl win. Huge thanks for our buddy Connor Riley on the fly, kind of pulling that out there. So we got 50 people. They're going to win one of these. Now, this one's wadded up because it's been in my pocket, but yours will be nice and crisp and clean. A really good way to kind of go back and relive some of the great moments in Dog Nation. If you're listening to radio podcast, the mask itself kind of looks like a Dog Nation story, right? One you would see at DogNation.com. This is a very bold reminder to folks of who you're a fan of and the fact that you may be one of Dog Nation's ultimate fans as well. So make sure you check that out online at DogNation.com. All right, with that said, now let's go around the doghouse, delivered today by our friends at Marco's Pizza. And one of the great storylines for the game on Saturday is the presence of Stetson Bennett once again as a Georgia starting quarterback on the road as a starter for the very first time. And, you know, I think that we get used to these stories, but it's still amazing to think about how much Stetson Bennett traveled, how many, you know, miles he had to travel to be the starting quarterback in a game like this on Saturday. And as we've said, listen, the guy on the other side himself is a little bit of a didn't expect to be here type quarterback in Mac Jones. But Mark Schlabaugh from ESPN.com had a great profile of Bennett this week. And one of the things that he highlighted is, remember, you know, Bennett was a guy, you know, kind of growing up in Blackshear, Georgia, didn't have all the big offers, had played well as a high school guy, had done well at some camps. But let's face it, you know, we're all obsessed with like tall guys, the big guys, and that's just not quite what Bennett brings to the table. But apparently a current Georgia Bulldog was quite instrumental in seeing Stetson Bennett arrive at Georgia initially as a preferred walk-on, and then the rest is kind of history. Let me show you this quote from Stetson Bennett III. That's Stetson Bennett IV, the current Georgia quarterback's father. This is from Mark Schlabaugh, ESPN.com. And this is a quote from Richard LeCount, who apparently went to Kirby Smart. Remember how instrumental LeCount was as a recruiter for Georgia back then? It's the always, we ain't done yet type stuff that LeCount was always doing. Well, this is also some recruiting work that LeCount did back then. As told by Stetson Bennett III, Davis Mills, that was the quarterback that eventually landed at Stanford, had been at GAC, might be the best quarterback in the country, LeCount told Smart, according to Stetson Bennett's father, but he's only second best in class AAA. Richard LeCount, as legend has it, says, I've played against both, and Stetson Bennett is better. And that's not to, you know, discount Davis Mills, who is a very good quarterback, and certainly hopefully the Pac-12 gets a chance to play again at some point. But it's really cool to hear. A great story of how Richard LeCount, who was quite a leader for that class of 2017, also leading the way and getting Stetson Bennett to the University of Georgia initially as a preferred walk-on, and now maybe the rest could truly be history as Stetson Bennett tries to write his own version of history with a big win at Alabama coming up on Saturday. That is really fun to think about. Something else that's fun to think about is our friends at Marco's Pizza. It's America's most beloved pizza. It's real, authentic pizza made the Italian way. Also, great savings for you as you head towards the weekend. Think about watching a bunch of sports this weekend, baseball tonight, football all the weekend. How about this to accompany that sports? A large one-topping pizza, 10 chicken wings or dippers, just $17.99 right now. Go to the Marco's app or marcos.com. You can find out a whole lot more about that. We are fully loaded today. Nick Saban drama of what may or may not still happen with him, how much his potential absence means. We're all over that story. Over the course of the rest of our program, Mike Johnson, the former Alabama All-American, to discuss that and more later on. But for now, big recruiting news this week. Let's relive that a little bit as we go on the road, assisted by AAA, with Jeff Sintel.
From Athens and across the SEC or wherever the recruiting trail may lead, here's a DogNation.com insider.
Say hello to Jeff Sintel here on the road, assisted by AAA. And Jeff, I want to spend most of our time talking about Amarius Mims because you were there with him in Cochran, Georgia on Saturday. And what a moment that was for both for Mims and his family and Georgia's 2021 class. But if you don't mind, let's piggyback off of just a little bit what we were saying before. First of all, it's really fond memories for me just to even think about how much of a great recruiter Richard LeCount was in 2017. Hard to believe that he's a senior now and playing, you know, in his last string of games here for Georgia, just given how pivotal he was to that first, what I would call great class for Kirby Smart in the Kirby Smart era, and the now legendary tale of him kind of vouching for Stetson Bennett, as Mark Schlabaugh told at ESPN.com this week. I think that's all just really fun and cool stuff, and kind of a good way to think about just how unlikely the path, and I know you've written about this at DogNation.com yourself, how unlikely the path that Stetson Bennett has traveled has been. I think it's fueled Bennett. I think it's made him a better player. Obviously, he's got some real tough work to do on Saturday and over the course of the rest of this season, but it has certainly been an enjoyable ride thus far, has it not?
Yeah, good morning, everybody. It certainly has. I mean, you bring those things up, and, you know, it's funny to see the national writer speak up and, you know, lend a national voice to this. But, I mean, man, that's the Stetson Bennett I've known since, I guess, 2016 down in Pierce County in Blackshear. I can remember him seeing at the Rising Seniors games. I mean, those are things that were a very big thing in the state of Georgia. And it was funny because, like, I think there was a press conference a couple weeks back when Kirby Smart was asked about Richard kind of stumping for Stetson Bennett. With Kirby Smart, and I can remember those stories vividly, how Richie's like, you know, this guy needs to be on this team. Richie had went against them a couple of times, and Stetson had lit his team up. You know, we published some quotes there about Stetson Bennett as well. And for folks that want to know, I mean, I hold both of these young men in great esteem. They're great quarterbacks. They're special quarterbacks with the football. But, you know, Jake Fromm and Stetson Bennett came in the same recruiting class, and I think maybe the differences are, you know, I think Stetson's ability is the clear difference, his mobility, his legs, speed, his ability to kind of do a little Johnny Manziel thing out there on the field. But there's never been any issue with Stetson's arm, at least compared to Jake. Those were similar arms in terms of RPMs. I think maybe Jake had a lot more touch and accuracy and, you know, a little bit better ability to layer the ball. But Stetson was always the gunslinger. That's a familiar term when you see narratives that are crafted about young Stetson. He was always the guy that was going to stick it in there. Toughness, resiliency, it just drips in down South Georgia boy. And remember, he is actually older than Jake Fromm and still the starting quarterback at the University of Georgia.
So shifting gears here to the Amarius Mims recruitment from Wednesday, a great battle won by Georgia for its class of 2021. I was really proud to be able to bring coverage of this on the Dog Nation video channels, but you were there on the scene in Cochran when this all goes down. And I'm always interested. I don't get a chance to be in many of these rooms when the recruit makes the decision, but the mood in the room is always a part of the story. And I know we're still in kind of a weird coronavirus type vibe, but this felt more normal than not, at least through the magic of video. What was your kind of behind the scenes look at being there? What did it feel like to be with Mims and his family and his friends and colleagues and coaches and everything else in Blackley County when he announced his pledge to the Dogs this week?
Well, it's funny. You've been to so many of these now, and things kind of slow down for you a little bit. You're able to scan the auditorium, and it's like things that you knew. I mean, to me, it had always kind of felt like Amarius was trending towards Georgia. And it was kind of like, look around the room, Brandon, and you see, like, okay, those are family members popping up. It looks like they're wearing red. There's red T-shirts on. There's Georgia stuff on. And I don't think they're trying to hide much subtlety about what's going on, rather than, I guess you could always say they're going to show up and represent their choice or their prediction. But you know, this is a very much Blackley County, Cochran, Georgia is very much a pro-Georgia, pro-University of Georgia type environment. I think Connor and I, we walked out of the barbecue joint where we ate lunch at, and we saw a Georgia golf cart that was branded to the tee outside of the local barbecue spot where we had lunch. And we're like, I looked at Connor and I said, well, I guess that's a good sign that that's a Georgia G. We kind of be kind of worried about foreshadowing if that was an orange painted regalia, you know, UT golf cart out there. But, you know, Amarius has always felt that sort of way about Georgia. He's told me before, even told me on the record, that he would have been committed to Georgia by now. Sam Pittman was the guy. To me, Brandon, I remember seeing him last year. I think it's the Texas A&M game. He was there. A lot of other recruits were there as well. But he just looked like, to me, that it was almost cemented that he was going to be a Bulldog. The way he acted, the way he interacted, I can compare those. It's not a polygraph, Brandon. It's not a crystal ball, but I can just compare that look, same look I saw in Trey Hill's face, same look I saw in D'Angelo Gibbs' face, same look I saw in the Torrey Johnson's and Jamari Salyer's face. It's one of the things you just can't hide when a young man's in Sanford Stadium.
I think that's really interesting. I actually want to talk to you more about that part of this in a moment, because there are a couple of interesting things you've said about that topic over the course of the last couple of days. Before that, though, let me remind you that we are on the road today with Jeff Sintel, assisted by AAA, fresh off Jeff's trip to Cochran, Georgia, for the Amarius Mims decision. And here's something else I want you to think about when you think about AAA. You know, life insurance is something that's very important for anyone who is responsible for taking care of somebody else. I can say, as the dad of two young kids, that when my wife and I, we first started thinking about starting our family, life insurance was big on our mind for that. And when life insurance is on your mind, I want AAA to be on your mind as well, and find out all the ways they can serve you from a life insurance perspective. Let me give you a few different ways you can get in touch to find out more about this. Really, three different ways. You can give them a call, 866-695-0222. That number, once again, 866-695-0222. You can also visit a local AAA office and just talk to somebody directly, one of their insurance agents right there in front of you, and you can have that face-to-face conversation about a topic that's as important as this. Or you can go online, AAA.com/life, for more information. That's AAA.com/life. And of course, it's great to have AAA as we're on the road, assisted by them here today with Jeff Sintel. And, you know, Jeff, on the Mims topic, the one thing that you have cautioned us on a little bit, as much as you say that you've, you know, kind of felt like that things were trending in Georgia's direction, that you believe, and at least you've said in the past, that this is still going to be an ongoing recruitment even beyond the announcement that was made on Wednesday. And Mims himself kind of gave some voice to that a little bit too. Would you mind expounding on that part of this, of just how much is now done regarding Mims now that he's publicly announced Georgia?
Yeah, it's funny. So the theatrics of it, the drama of it, was he left that door open for, you know, he still might take a visit to Tennessee. He still, it was really, you know, some really close people around the program told me, and around Marius told me that, you know, dude, this was closer than I guess a lot of people thought, probably 55, 45, 52, 48, with Georgia carrying the majority, and I guess we'll call it the Electoral College in his brain for his decision to choose the University of Georgia. But, you know, he kind of left that hint there, which is to me a 18-year-old kid saying, you know, I still kind of like, you know, being the recruited All-American that everybody's asking about. I'm sure he still appreciates all Vol Nation on Twitter when they basically would send him 97 notifications if he ate a ham and cheese sandwich at lunch on across his social media. I think this feels done, Brandon. I talked to some family members, and they said that this decision had been thinking about, they've been thinking about for a while. Maybe there's some finality that came to it on the day before his decision. But a lot of them, he just kept saying one thing over and over, Brandon. He said, I just realized that Georgia was the place where I needed to be. And that might be hometown kid going to the big state school. It might be performing and training under Matt Luke. It might be playing with his buddy Brock Vandegrift, who, you know, Brock Vandegrift quietly had some pretty good feeling about which way Amarius Mims was leaning. And you guys saw on the Dog Nation webpage yesterday, I wrote a story that basically combined, I think, 12 out of the 16 public commitments and their thoughts on Mims and how glad they were to have him and what they were thinking down the line. A lot of folks thought that they were going to get Mims, but, you know, when he says something like Georgia was where I needed to be, it felt like I needed to be, that says a lot, even though he's going to take his decision, you know, he'll sign during December. He'll enroll in January. I just think Mount Mims, as I kind of call him a lot, huge young man, huge prospect, but he certainly seems tailor-made for the G.
So that collage of faces that involves him and Corey Foreman and Mason Smith, we all remember that from a few weeks ago, and I know this is something you've also been asked really a whole bunch since the Mims decision became somewhat official on Wednesday. How influential do you think that this five-star is with some of those other five-stars that I just mentioned? Is this really the continuation of more recruiting momentum for Georgia? Does this make it easier to win with a Smith or a Foreman, guys like that, now that Mims has gone public with his desire to be at UGA?
I kind of felt that most of those young men kind of knew what he and Brock were all about. But this put some finality to it. I guess the way I would say this, Brandon, to answer your question as best I can, is the raging momentum that's happening now in Georgia's recruiting. Look how, especially, let's just go straight to AGAP here on this. Everybody wants to know what Marius Mims could potentially mean for Brock, for Corey Foreman and also Mason Smith. And all this raging momentum for Georgia, if Amarius would have chose Tennessee, that would have been a firewall, I guess, or a firebreak in terms of all this momentum. That didn't happen. The thing that I remember all those young men saying, there's the story that was relayed about how Corey Foreman looked at all in the eye at dinner and said, this is a very special group. This is a great group of guys. I've never kind of felt this around everyone like this before. That's positive momentum. It continues to be positive momentum, especially when you see how Georgia creating havoc, which is what Foreman and Mason Smith wanted to see. Georgia playing great defense. Georgia winning big ball games. And then you got an LSU who is seen as the most, that's just the team Georgia's going to have to duke it out with, I believe, to get both Mason Smith and Corey Foreman. And you see LSU, especially defensively, not being up to par, not being the unit that everybody knows them to be, not looking like DBU, not looking like a place where you currently see 12 NFL draft picks or 12 NFL prospects on defense. I think all these things are happening in Georgia's favor. A win on Saturday would continue that momentum. It would say that Georgia's arrived, Georgia's there. And I think that would just continue things on, especially with Mason Smith and Corey Foreman going forward.
Well, Jeff, we certainly appreciate you being here on the road today, assisted by AAA. Your coverage of the Mims announcement was great, and the subsequent stories at DogNation.com have helped us better understand that story as well. I know you'll be all over Georgia-Bama over the course of the weekend, both a look ahead on that game and a look back at the freshmen who get involved. So thanks for being here on our program today, on the road, assisted by AAA, and we'll look forward to catching up with you again next week.
Brendan, I got this text from two different people today. They said if Bryce Wilson can do it against the Los Angeles Dodgers, Stetson Bennett can do it for the Georgia Bulldogs. That's just something people are sunshine pumping today heading into Tuscaloosa.
You know what, Jeff? That is a great way to close out that conversation, and I think you're absolutely right on both counts.
Have a good one, man. Drive safe.
Let's take a look around the rest of the league. This is SEC Through.
So how about Jeff with a great Braves take on the way out the door there? Yeah, fun. You know, this really takes me back. I mean, I've always loved this time of year. October is the best sporting month. You know, obviously on this show, we talk exclusively about college football, exclusively for the most part about the Georgia Bulldogs and the SEC. But I've always been a big Braves fan, been a big baseball fan. And I love nothing more than the way that, you know, you do baseball in the week leading up to the weekend with the college football stuff. And I just love it. I mean, we've been battening down the hatches for these games, you know, every night. My family into the games, you know, good chance to hang out with some friends and watch the games. It's been great. And to think the Braves are one game away from the World Series. By the way, we got some fun stuff coming up next week away from the Dog Nation channels. If the Braves, you know, do keep this run going, I'll just drop a little hint on that. I'm not supposed to say much more, I don't think. But either way, it's really fun. And it was great last night. Bryce Wilson, a great job taking down the L.A. Dodgers once again, Clayton Kershaw. That was fun all the way around. We're a few minutes away here from our buddy Mike Johnson. We'll talk more Georgia-Bama with him. Let me also remind you about my friends at Classic City Lager. It's a Creature Comforts Brewing Company feature, and it is an Athens original, and you're watching baseball tonight. You're watching football this weekend. I tell you, it pairs well with all of it, and the good thing is, you know, when I drink Classic City Lager, it makes me think about Athens, but you don't have to be in Athens to pick it up. Whatever retailer you go to, it's available year-round, 6, 12-pack cans. It's a lager-style beer, which means it's an easy-drinking beer, but there's no sacrifice for flavor. This is still a crisp, great-tasting beer. In fact, it's good, cold beer. It's just as simple as that. You can find out more about it checking out the hashtag, good, cold beer. Enjoy yourself some Classic City Lager here this weekend. All right, let me preview a couple of these SEC games for the upcoming weekend. I'll be very candid here for a moment. One of the criticisms that probably sticks to me is I'm often wrong, but never in doubt. I'll own that. That's probably true. This weekend, though, I don't mind telling you, I'm more in doubt about some of the games for this weekend than I typically might be. And it's also worth pointing out, even in the aftermath of the postponement of LSU and Florida, obviously Vanderbilt, Missouri, which really no one cares about anyway, the weirdness involving Nick Saban, there's still a pretty interesting crop of games here this weekend, and I am not all that certain how some of these games are going to go down, but I think the storylines around them are actually pretty fascinating. Let's start with Auburn going to South Carolina as a small favorite. They've been about a field goal favorite all week long here in this. Auburn is a team that I tried to say a lot during the offseason was better than they were being given credit for. Well, that has not been true very much the first three games. They got blown out by Georgia, which Dog fans are obviously happy about. And they really should have lost last week to Arkansas. And the fact that they should have lost to Arkansas was an eye-opening thing for me because the Auburn program ought to have massive advantages over the Arkansas program because Auburn's recruited far better. They've got some stability in place. Arkansas is doing all of this brand new. And as much as I love the hires that Sam Pittman has made there, the talent advantage that Auburn had last week should have been enough for a coasting easy victory. And it took some bad calls from the officials to even preserve an Auburn win on Saturday. So this is kind of a back-against-the-wall performance for Auburn this week against South Carolina. I do think Auburn's the better team here, even though I've kind of argued for South Carolina also at times being a little undervalued. They obviously blew past Vanderbilt last week. This is still a situation where I think Auburn has to play hard this week to have anything the rest of the year really matter at all. I guess that's kind of what I expect to happen, but kind of a last stand here for Auburn to prove that they are in any way, shape, form involved in the 2020 season. That's what this game's about on Saturday. A little bit the same thing for Tennessee, too. Tennessee hosts Kentucky on Saturday. That's Georgia's opponent next week, by the way. A game that you still got to be very careful about going on the road next Saturday after the big game in Tuscaloosa, and we'll do plenty on that next week. But the point here is that Tennessee through two games was probably a little better than I expected them to be. I thought they would lose to South Carolina week one. They didn't. I thought they might get challenged by Missouri. They weren't. But again, last week, they get blown out by Georgia. So which is the real Tennessee, the one that couldn't stay with Georgia at all, or the one that coasted to eight consecutive wins, including two to start this year? The rivalry game against Kentucky, which normally is much later in the year, I think becomes the real measuring stick for all of that. This is a real show-up game for Tennessee to prove that they are an improved program. And if they can't handle their business or can't do it impressively against Tennessee, then more questions are going to come on Jeremy Pruitt on the heels of really getting beaten up pretty bad by Georgia. The games that I feel the strongest about in terms of how they're going to go this season, this weekend, and games that I think are probably worth watching. You know, Arkansas gets a chance to host Ole Miss after everything it's been through over the course of, you know, the season thus far. And this is a spot where I think Arkansas is actually pretty dangerous. I've never seen a team like Ole Miss brag on itself so much for losing a game against Alabama. The Rebels have really kind of treated that as if it was a win because they scored a bunch of points against the Crimson Tide, but ultimately it was actually a loss. And anytime a team explodes for a big offensive performance on at home and then goes on the road, I think it ends up kind of being a little bit of a dangerous spot. So I've actually got Arkansas winning that game outright on Saturday. And the Texas A&M Mississippi State game, I think, is also interesting a little bit, too. A&M probably turns the corner, but maybe a little bit of a hiccup against Mississippi State, closer than the experts think. We will make that your SEC through. And here on Dog Nation Daily, presented by our friends at Kroger, let's get ready to say hello to my good friend Mike Johnson, the great former Alabama Crimson Tide product and a terrific analyst and a guy that we just haven't talked to in nearly enough time. It's been way too long since he's been back on the program. So, Mike, welcome back. Thanks for being here on Dog Nation Daily, presented by Kroger, and I hope that you're doing well. And let me, if you don't mind putting your business out there on the streets here, congratulations on a new addition for your family. What a time this is to be in the Johnson household, I guess.
Yeah, man, I definitely appreciate you having me on. It has been a long time, way too long since we had a chance to talk, especially talking some Georgia and Bama football, but I really appreciate it. Not a lot of sleep going on in the Johnson household, but a whole lot of love, that's for sure, man. He's been awesome. He's 8 weeks old now, and I hate to say it, but hopefully he winds up at Alabama down the road.
I understand Saban's already offered him. Is that true?
I tell you what, if he ever sees the size of his hands, he might throw one out there about 16, 17 years in advance. I'll tell you that.
That's good to know. All right, you and I are good friends. We can speak candidly. I need you to tell me this. Mike, what kind of chicanery are you guys trying to pull this weekend with this Saban stuff? I got Desmond.
I knew it was coming. I knew it was coming before you even started the question. I knew it was coming.
Desmond Howard's on Twitter this morning saying he thinks that Nick Saban's still on the sideline. I got no problem with him being on the sideline or even in the booth. Mike, what I don't want is I don't want him coaching this game from home. I think that reeks of something about that seems really fishy to me. Saban trying to coach this game from home. I've said before, you can't have a cell phone at a blackjack table. I don't want Saban having some sort of telecom hookup with people inside the stadium. What are y'all trying to pull this weekend? Reveal it to the world right now.
Listen, man, I'm actually with you on that. I don't find that to be fair, and maybe that's the fact that I've been coaching high school ball, and you know, we always are trying to find our own way to kind of one up things. And the first thing I thought of was, man, I hope you know, I would hate for somebody else to be doing that, watching one of our high school games at home. So I don't know. And to me, honestly, BA, I don't think it has a ton to do with the outcome of the game. You know, where Coach Saban coaches from, or if he does or he doesn't. It, to me, the way things have looked recently. Now, I wasn't this way when I was in school, but to me, the way things have looked recently is that he's definitely had more of a hands-off, kind of passive approach on the sideline. You know, there's been less and less butt-chewing, like Lane Kiffin likes to call him, in recent years. So I don't know where he'll be coaching from. I'd love to see him on the sideline. But, you know, to me, and it's crazy to say this day and age, but this is 2020. It's a crazy year. I don't know that Nick Saban being on the sideline changes the game either way. I think the players still have to go out and perform. The game plan will be the same. The adjustments will probably be the same for the most part, and you'll have to see the players go out and play against one another.
In all seriousness, I actually almost 100% agree with you on that. I guess if it was one of those things, and I would certainly hope this never happens, but if his health condition caused him to miss a series of games, by the end of that streak, I could see some erosion where all of a sudden, you know, him kind of keeping everything kind of right and tight, all of a sudden that kind of goes away. But for one game, which is really all of our audience cares about right now, it's going to happen on Saturday against Georgia, kind of holding it together, even if Saban's not there, I actually don't expect much of a reduction in performance from Alabama on Saturday, and it sounds like you kind of agree.
I do, and let's be honest, Alabama can't afford more of a reduction, especially on the defense side of the ball after last weekend. I think, you know, the game plan is going to be the same. Coach Saban's going to be watching film, whether it's from home or you know, whether it's from the office, they're going to be game planning the same way with Pete Golding. He's going to allow Steve Sarkisian to do what he wants to do offensively. You know, I think some of the in-game calls, some of the in-game decisions might get changed. Hey, do we go for it on fourth and short here? When do we kick field goals? But for the most part, I mean, look, Sark's been a head coach. I'm sure, you know, that if it comes down to that, Nick Saban will be in his ear as far as those situations go in the game, what he would like to see him do, what he thinks he should do, and he'll be as prepared as possible. But I don't know that it changes a whole lot in terms of what really, really happens during the game. You know, obviously Nick Saban, one of the greatest to ever do it, but, you know, this game's going to be about a lot more than just those minor adjustments.
So you mentioned the Alabama defense. Obviously, statistically, that's not been what we've come to expect from that unit. You know, last week against Ole Miss, Mike, I don't know that Georgia fans take a ton from that game, because I think most Georgia fans would say that the UGA style, even with Todd Monken as offensive coordinator, is still a good bit different than Lane Kiffin. Kiffin just wants to play a lot faster than Georgia probably wants to. But I think Georgia fans do have a hope that maybe some of those Alabama defensive weaknesses can be exploited a little bit. What do you make of why the Tide has had so much trouble on that side of the ball thus far this year?
Oh, there's a lot of questions. I think first and foremost, some of the players you've expected to step up in the positions that Alabama has been great at. Alabama's been great at safety. Alabama's been great at middle linebacker. And for the most part, last weekend, Dylan Moses has just not played up to par. I don't know if he's dealing with an injury or if he has just not come along the way they thought he would after his injury a year ago. And Daniel Wright, the safety, has just not played the way that Alabama is used to seeing those guys play at those particular positions. So I know a lot of Alabama fans have hit the panic button after last week. I mean, listen, myself included. I never thought in a million years that I would see an Alabama defense exposed like that. But I think there is some solace for some Alabama fans that you do look at a different system, that maybe Georgia's a little bit more old school in terms of the way they approach the offensive side of the football. And there's no secret to what Alabama's going to do. Alabama's going to try to man up on Georgia's wide receivers. They're going to try to play, you know, an eight-man box, and they're going to challenge Georgia to run the ball right at them. And it's like Nick Saban always talks about. They're going to try to force Georgia's offense to be left-handed. They're going to say, hey, Stetson Bennett, please go out and win this game. If you can win this game, great. But we're not going to let you run the ball down our throat, control, you know, the clock and do all those things like Georgia football likes to do. So I think it's an interesting matchup, and I think you're going to put a lot of pressure on kind of that secondary shell from Alabama's defense and kind of see what you can do up front.
Let me squeeze in a couple other things before we let you go real quick. You mentioned Stetson Bennett. That's obviously not the quarterback that many Georgia fans would be expecting to start in a game like this. And yet Bennett's played really well over the course of the last couple of weeks. On the other side, Mac Jones has a little bit of that too. He was the second quarterback in the class that brought Tua Tagovailoa. He's less heralded as a recruit than Bryce Young is. Has that talk quieted down in Alabama? Do Bama fans now see Mac Jones as the guy? Is he the unquestioned starter, or is there still a little bit of, hey, when's Bryce Young going to be on the football field and playing more? I mean, obviously, Jones' stats speak for themselves. Has he fully won over the Alabama fans?
I don't think there's any doubt. When you look at his offensive performance, I mean, listen, we can talk about the defense against Ole Miss all we want to, but if Alabama's offense even hiccups a little bit against Ole Miss, Alabama probably doesn't win that football game. And I think for the most part, everybody over in Tuscaloosa in the state of Alabama and all the Alabama fans in general have really bought into what Mac Jones is. And to be honest with you, B.A., you know me, the way I look at football, I was almost excited. Now, I don't want to say excited. I was almost looking forward to a Tua Tagovailoa, a post-Tua Tagovailoa era. Because
sure,
you look at Tua Tagovailoa on the field and you say, okay, we're going to let Tua win the game. That's not so much what you look at for Mac Jones. You say, okay, let's run Najee Harris now behind this really good offensive line, and then Mac Jones can kind of complement that. And he has been a perfect complement. He's really good at throwing the deep ball. He's really good at making those decisions. You can tell he's an upperclassman and not one of these freshmen that have been rushed into action. He's a smart playmaker, and he's done all the things that have been asked of him. And for me and most of the people I talk to associated with it, everybody feels really good about what Mac Jones has done.
All right, before we let you go, I always like your objective analysis on George. It's just kind of good to get the perspective of someone on the outside looking in here. UGA fans are obviously thrilled by the defense, but there's probably a little bit of skepticism, and probably some from me too, on in 2020, whether a team led more by defense than offense can actually compete and win a national championship. As they get ready to play your alma mater on Saturday, how good do you think Georgia is right now?
I think they're a really good football team. I still want to see some things from them. You know, you mentioned it offensively. And listen, this is the exact same thing. We've talked about it before. When you look at the teams I played on back in 2008, 2009, we were very run heavy. We were defensive dominant. We played into the hands of our defense because we knew they were really good. But at the end of the year, you know, Greg McElroy had to make plays in the SEC championship game against Auburn. I think that there's still a little bit of that question mark out there. But I tell you what really raises my eyebrows about this Georgia football team, BA, is they play tough. And I think there's just something to be said for a personality of a football team that takes on the personality of their head coach. They're a tough group of guys. They're nitty-gritty. They're going to get down in the trenches. They're going to do what's necessary to run the ball and stop the run. And when you have a tough football team, more times than not, they will find a way to win the game. And I think Stetson Bennett just kind of fits into that blue-collar category of a guy that's going to make the right decisions and going to make the tough plays. So I'm excited to see, you know, the brand of football they're going to bring. I'm sad that, you know, there's not going to be a packed crowd in Tuscaloosa. Yeah. It's been, 13 years since Georgia's come to Tuscaloosa. I was there last time. I was a sophomore. But I think it's going to be a fun game either way, and I'm excited to see two brands of football kind of go at it.
Well, Mike, you've always been a great broadcaster and analyst. You're a great coach now, working with the next generation of football players. Thanks for spending some – I know it's busy for you right now, so thanks for spending some time with us here on Dog Nation Daily presented by Kroger, and I really hope we get a chance to catch up again very soon.
It's few and far between these days, B.A., but I always enjoy it, brother.
Great stuff. Yeah, man, I love having Mike Johnson on the show. He's just really good at what he does, and it's cool that we got a chance to catch up with him before the big Georgia-Alabama game on Saturday. Let me also give a shout-out to my friends at MyBookie here as well. You know, it's winning season at MyBookie. That means your chance to take advantage of big first deposit bonuses. You can get up to $1,000. You can get your first deposit doubled, but you've got to use the promo code DOGNATION. One word, D-A-W-G. Put MyBookie in your browser, then use the promo code DOGNATION. As I said, all those great deposit bonuses like getting it doubled, getting up to $1,000, you're essentially a winner before the betting even starts. But then after that, you simply play, win, and get paid. Winning season at MyBookie. Make sure you take advantage of that by using the promo code DOGNATION. Nation. Hope all of you get ready to enjoy Georgia and Bama on Saturday. We are loaded with coverage. I will be in Tuscaloosa tomorrow for our Kroger kickoff. Then after the game for our Dog Nation post-game show presented by the UGA Bookstore. Also, Gator Hater Updater. Let's give that to you as we say goodbye to you for the weekend. How about 1,448 days? We'll see you Monday, Dog Nation Daily, presented by Kroger.